Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders who share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun, from elite athletes to weekend warriors. Find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe to The Rundown. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
And so Saturday we had that elite meeting and all the elites were there. And I've never met so many fast runners all at once in one room.
Right.
And that was intimidating.
Did
but
you feel small? Like
I felt small. I felt small. But at the same time, I was like, wow, this is one of it's probably once in your life to have all of these people together for that one day. And it was amazing.
On this episode of The Rundown, we'll delve into running at length with elite Quebec runner, Ariane Rabi. Find out how she made the jump from winning 5 and 10Ks to half and full marathons while maintaining her competitive edge and desire to win. This episode is brought to you by Movember, a cause that is most recognized for its mustache and has evolved into so much more. In fact, you don't even need to grow a mustache to participate. Keep your beard, grow or don't. The most important thing is raising awareness to fight the four main causes: mental health, suicide prevention, prostate cancer, and testicular cancer. Getting involved is easy. Sign up or donate at Movember.com to help change the face of men's health. In the news this week, I just want to talk about the Toronto Waterfront Marathon that happened on October 21st. In his marathon debut, Cam Levins shattered Jerome Drayton's 43-year-old Canadian men's record, and he beat it by 44 seconds, ran a time of 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 25 seconds, which led him to a 4th-place finish. And that record by Drayton was held for a long, long time. He set that record back in 1975 in Japan. Levins, who broke the record, walked away with $6,000 for finishing 4th place and also $43,000 for now holding the Canadian record. So he got basically $1,000 for each year Drayton's mark stood. Next week, on November 7th, at Microbrasserie Catharizin, we're going to have our 4th edition of the Run to Beer series. We're going to go for a run as usual, come back, have a talk with our guest speaker, Sam Trudell. And again, that's a run for all levels. We want to see new faces out there. Invite a friend. We're going to have a 5, 7, and 10K run. The event can be found on Facebook. Just type in run, the number 2, and beer, and it should pop up for you guys. And again, we're out there to have fun. It's going to be probably a cooler type of day than we've been used to. And also, in the spirit of Movember, Catharizin, it will be donating $1 for every brown ale pint sold throughout the month. So if you're going to have a refreshment, maybe select the brown ale beers because it's going to a really good cause. So that's happening next week. Hope to see you all there. Again, we're really pumped about it. It's probably going to be our second to last one before the break over the winter, but it's going to be great. So that's it for the news. Gotta run. For myself, I find that having good coaches is really important when preparing for a race, but I also think it's really important to have a great training partner, and that's who I have here today on The Rundown. So I'd like to welcome you, Ariane Rabi. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Justin, for having me.
No problem. So we actually trained this morning, which is a lot of fun.
Yep.
Which is a common occurrence. So we've been training together pretty much, well, for a few years now, but more consistently this year, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I just want to know from you, first of all, this year you had the Berlin Marathon, 2:39:37 as a time. That's crazy. Did you ever think that would be possible?
I think it was a possibility, definitely, because my training was mostly focused on that pace. I think mentally I was prepared for this kind of performance. I didn't know if my body would follow. since I had a rocky year, I would call it. Mm-hmm. But I felt really good the day of the race. And when I realized I felt that way, maybe halfway through the race, I was like, wow, this is great. I'm going to achieve my goal. And I know it probably hurt like early to think that in the race, but I just believe in myself.
Which is the most important thing going in, right? It's the mindset you go in with is the mindset you're going to kind of carry through. So
yeah, definitely.
And definitely traveling and stuff like that too must have been a lot of time to think about it and reflect on the training ahead. And
I think it was probably, I mean, you're always kind of nervous before a marathon. It's 42.2K, and a lot of can happen during that 42.2K. Right. And I think I had a lot of anxiety, but I was trying to focus mostly on, what I wanted to achieve in Berlin. And it was great because I had my husband, my best friend, some other Canadians were there. Mm. And it was beautiful there. I had everything that I needed to do a great performance.
Awesome. And look, we know you're a marathoner now, but for those who don't know, where did this all start? Like, how was your childhood? What was that like growing up? Were you always athletic? Were your parents an athletic couple? Or?
When I was a child, definitely didn't think about running. I was a soccer player. Mm-hmm. My parents put me early into sports, tried a couple of different sports, ballet, swimming, tennis. And when I finally found something that I liked, which was running, to get the ball, that put me in great shape, I guess. My parents were always very athletic. My mom was she's a runner. She's still a runner. My dad was a gymnast. And I think both of them, their genes, definitely gave something, gave me a talent. And I played soccer for a couple of years. And it's actually my mom that pushed me into running. I think she was seeing the potential in me. And I think I started running more seriously around 16 or 17 years old by racing cross-country races at school. I think it was my education teacher in high school who saw that I could potentially do well on the track. And she talked to her dad, who was a coach at that time, a retired coach. And she was trying to, start a run group in Repentigny, my hometown. And around 17 years old, that's when I started doing 800 meter. That was my my best races. Mm. Yeah.
Cool. And did you always like it? Did you always enjoy running?
Because
sometimes, our parents put us,
right,
could put us in things that we don't enjoy necessarily, or we start liking it and then it gets too serious. Or did you find that the shift from more for fun went into more competitive? And
I think what I liked about running the most was winning or getting on the podium. When I started racing cross country, I was, top three most of the time. And the distances were, at that time, I think 3 or 4K. And the training wasn't too hard because I could combine soccer practice and running practice. And I think I liked the fact that I was in a group with other people and we're just running all together. So the social part of it. And when it became more serious, I realized that the running itself could bring me farther than soccer. And the fact that I was winning and traveling, both was something that I really enjoyed. Mm. Yeah.
And what's the difference between the track and the cross country?
I think cross country is, you don't have a specific, you don't have laps. You have a course, you have mud. In the fall, because cross country is during the fall, you have more factors that can affect your performance. And so it's not always the best runner who's going to win cross country.
Okay.
On the track, however, other than the wind or the rain, it's a flat surface. And you have visual, target, like the lap or the last 200. So for someone that is focused, I think track races are probably easier. And the fact that I had both during the year was just more fun. I was always looking forward to the cross country season.
Okay, cool. And I know now, like knowing you, as I know you, like we've only known each other about 3 years. We met through the running community.
Yeah.
Was I know how like goal oriented you are and goal focused you are. And there's always something, there's always a plan.
Yeah.
For as long as I've known you, there's always been a plan. So was that something at a very young age that you had also? Were you like at 16, 17, starting to believe in yourself a little bit?
Mm.
You're having fun doing it, obviously. And so where did that high school running lead you?
I think when I was around 17 years old, that's when my coach told me that, you know, if you keep racing and running fast, and for every distances, we have standards. So these standards, they get you into faster races. And one thing my coach told me is, you know, you're really great at school and you race pretty fast. And these two things can bring you farther in life because you can get a scholarship in a college. And I didn't know that at that time because I didn't really think it was a possibility. So I was in CGEP after that. And when he told me that I should apply to the U.S., I didn't even think it was possible. So I did apply. So I think I was kind of just doing what my coach was telling me. And my parents, you know, were supportive. So they were just telling me, you know, go for it. And when I applied to Boston College and Indiana University, I also applied to some Quebec schools. But the thing in Quebec is we don't have as much support from the schools. So, you know, scholarship. And when you want to race fast, you can't do everything at the same time. You need to rest. So you can't work, go to school, and then train. You know, to get that money, that support, I was seeing myself probably do better in the U.S. And that's what I did. I went to Indiana University.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And what was that experience like?
It was difficult. So I'm a Francophone, so I at first I was only speaking French.
Yeah.
And when I moved there, I had to learn how to speak English. I wasn't, you know, bad, but I was struggling. And I would say there was some adaptation, but not in running. I was only doing great in running, difficulties in school, but obviously it was a matter of time. And when I went through that barrier, I was able to enjoy fully my experience.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so, and I mean, was there any highlights from university track that you were, because you were obviously on a team?
Yeah.
Was that some of the best races that you've ever had? Like,
well, I mean, there they don't only look at how fast you can race. They look at points, your position in the race. And I mean, we were racing, I think, every weekend throughout the year, which is a lot. Here in Quebec, we do, let's say, about 5 to 10 races a year. And so the thing that I wasn't used to, you know, racing that much, I think affected me a lot because I got injured every year. I would get a stress fracture or a tear, a ligament, tendon. I had so many injuries that put me aside, and it was hard to come back after that. But, you know, I don't only remember bad things about it. I also found out that I was a strong person because every time I had a struggle or a down moment, I was able to come back stronger. And I think I got to know myself better through that experience. I stayed there for 5 years and, you know, I got a degree. I got to learn English, and I also found out that I was becoming a better distance runner because 800 meter is nothing like racing a 10K or a marathon. But I think the fact that I was able to do every distances pretty well, that showed me how strong I was in training.
And at the collegiate level, what distances do they cover?
In college, they do the 800, the 1500, the mile. I mean, obviously, there's some sprint events. But they don't go up more than 5 and 10K.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so was this something that you gradually did? Did your coach say, was it in practice that he discovered that you were a good longer distance than short track?
Yeah, runner, for example? So he was able to put me in every workouts, whatever it was for 800 meter or 10K workouts. I think what he was afraid of was me getting injured if it was giving me too much. So he never put me through a 5K or a 10K race, even if I asked him. I always wanted to do a steeplechase, which is an event with, you know, barriers you jump over. I also asked him, you know, I can help the team with a 5K, but he never wanted. So I never got the chance in college to try these events. And I was a pretty good 1500 runner, but I think, you know, with time and looking back to my experience, I would have been great at 5K and 10K.
Okay. And after college, did you get a chance finally to do that? I know you've raced a lot since then. So where did that collegial level of running take you? And why did you choose to continue? School was over.
Right.
The scholarship was done. You know, the hard training was over, essentially, because I'm sure you guys worked out a ton when you were
yeah.
in school, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they make you work for that scholarship.
Oh, yeah, they did. Which is fine. I always enjoyed, you know, training, obviously. But on my fifth year of college, when I graduated, so that was in 2014, I was actually injured. So I broke my foot, and I was offered before then a sponsorship to train on the post-collegiate team. And I was offered to stay in Indiana and train full-time. However, I didn't see myself staying there because I felt like I had to go home. And when I went home, I stopped running. So I stopped running for about 3-4 months. And because I just lost interest into running, I was always I was looking for the next chapter, working, finally using my degree. And so when I started working with clients in the strength training rooms, I realized I miss running. So I bought a pair of shoes and I started putting some miles in and realized that, you know, I could try to do a 5K. So I signed up for my first 5K race on the road, which I never did. I've always, you know, raced 5Ks on cross-country season. And so I remember my first race back was somewhere in Montreal or maybe some other city. And that's where I met my coach, Claude.
Claude, yeah.
Yeah.
Great guy, Claude.
Yeah, great guy.
Father figure, Claude.
Yeah, exactly. He was kind of surprised to see me there. He's like, since when do you race 5Ks? And I'm like, well, it's my first one. And I did pretty well. It wasn't like the fastest. It was like 18 minutes something. But for, you know, for having...
So humble.
So for having a couple of months of running back into me, I realized that I really missed it. And I was looking forward for the next race. And at that time, I was working 40 hours a week. And that was my life, just running and working. And I wasn't looking into racing fast yet. But after the fall of 2014, I started racing a little bit more, and I contacted Claude 2015.
Okay.
Cool. And that's when I told him, hey, you know, I don't have a coach right now, and I've been coaching myself. I kind of would like you to coach me.
Okay.
And he laughed. He laughed because he didn't think I was gonna ask him that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And what did, so, well, did he accept?
Yeah, he did. Well, at first he said, let me think about it.
Okay.
And I was kind of nervous because like, oh, I don't want him to say no. And then, because I didn't know who else I would ask.
Right.
I didn't know that many coaches in Montreal. And I was looking into someone that was chill, that was not going to push me too much. You know, I wasn't committed 100% at that time. I just wanted to have fun and, you know, train and race.
Yeah.
And see where it would, you know, bring me. And a week after, Claude, he sent me a text and said, all right, let's do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, I guess my next question is a two-parter. So, what was the difference for you? Like, why did you decide at that point? Because most people don't have a coach.
Yeah, a coach, yeah.
I'd say most people that just go out and run, they train themselves, they ask their friends, they look online, everything's mm-hmm. available. So, self-taught. And this is kind of how I started too, to go into a coach. Like, what was the, why did you choose to do that? If your goal wasn't to go so fast, or mm-hmm. what was the importance, or what do you see the value in having Claude as a coach?
Well, I think at that time I was kind of bored of, you know, writing down my own training. That was one thing I remember. The second thing is I decided that if I was going to put that much time into my training, I would rather go somewhere. And I didn't mind, you know, doing 7 days of running at that time. But when Claude, you know, told me, he's like, okay, what are your goals? That's when I realized, okay, I don't really have any goals. For me, goals are, you know, I'm going to pick a distance. And that year was 5 and 10K. And, you know, when we discussed exactly what races we would do, I told him, you know what? I want you to send me a week at a time of training. And then when I feel ready to race, I'm going to let you know. And that, for me, that was, that's all I needed. And Claude was fine with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I didn't have a time in mind. I didn't have, you know, a distance. I knew I wanted to race 5 or 10K, but I didn't know exactly where I was going. And Claude was fine with it. So that's all I needed.
You just needed more structure.
More structure,
essentially.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that a lot of beginner runners, amateur runners, people that want to get faster, people that want to run a bit longer, I think everyone can use this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Structure is the foundation of your training. If you don't have a structure, you can't really achieve a specific goal. And having a coach looking for you to, like, what kind of training you should do, or when are your easy days, depending on your schedule, your work schedule, your family schedule. Right. It just reduces your level of stress and anxiety almost, because you don't have to think for something else. Mm-hmm. You know, we already have so much responsibilities that not having to control or think about your training and just, you know, okay, I'm going to do what he told me. For me, it was just easier that way.
To show up
to the training, whatever time we would schedule, and to do it, and then let him know how the training went.
It's like how we train now. I just show up, I do your workout.
That's it. I tell you what to do, we do it.
And that's it, we do it, and you're good, and I'm good, and that's it. I'm tired, and
I am.
I complain.
I complain too.
Yeah, it's all part of it. So when were you finally, so I guess this was, if I look at the timeline, I probably met you in about, we're 2018 now, so I think we met 3 years ago.
3 years
so
ago, yeah.
About the same time, or in line with the same time that you picked up Claude.
Yeah.
I probably met you, and I met you through my coaches, Kat and Kev, who you know very well. And we met them through the run community.
Exactly.
Amazing ultra human beings. And good people introduce you to good people. And then that's, I met you on the on Mount Royal.
Yeah.
We went for a run.
I remember.
I remember Kat telling me, oh, you got to meet Ariane. She's the nicest girl. She's such a great runner. And she, you never know it. You know, she's so humble about it and this and that. But I don't think even at that point you knew where you were headed.
No, not at all.
So I guess from coaching, from getting the coaching from Claude, and building up some endurance, when was the first race and your experience with Claude?
I was definitely lacking endurance. That's something I can be honest with. 2015 was probably step one of our plan. Get a good base training, you know, get some experience into racing, 5-10K. And then when 2016 went around, you know, when we started discussing our goals, I was very, involved in my community as I was doing a lot of stuff. And what I like about Claude is he was able to manage my training. Every time I was telling him, hey, I have this event this weekend, how can I arrange my training? So it was really important for me to train really hard, but also to be involved in my community. So having my run clubs, my training stuff. But in 2016, something happened. I decided I wanted to run my first half marathon.
Right, I remember.
Yeah. And I was telling people, I'm going to win. I'm going to win the half marathon in Ottawa. And I'm going to race sub 120. That was my goal. And it was really hard. It was long work. You know, I had to do long workouts, which I never really did. The mileage went up and I was not injured. Since the day I met Claude 3 years ago, I never had an injury until this year,
right,
or last year.
Right.
But, you know, what I liked about the half marathon in Ottawa is it just gave me a perspective of how much I can achieve in, you know, that amount of time. Mm-hmm. When I completed Ottawa, which I did in 118, and I won.
I was also there.
Yeah. Behind. No.
Yeah, behind, yeah. Well behind, for sure.
I realized that, okay, I might want to sign up for my first marathon. And cool. When I told Claude, he was like, oh, okay, where is this coming from? And it was, I think we were 10 weeks before Montreal Marathon. And that's when I told him.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so what did the, what do those plans look like? What are your weekly training? What is your weekly training? Without getting too specific, obviously, into every single workout, but what does a training week look like for you that brought you to such a great time and finish in Ottawa?
I'm
just going to just get a little closer and speak. Yeah. If you can't hear it, then...
I can hear it.
Okay, perfect. Okay. I just want to make sure it's like good.
Do you hear it?
I hear it good, okay. Yeah.
So my training, you know, my weekly training plan looks like this. So I have definitely 7 days of running. With Claude, we don't really take days off. I have days that, you know, easy training, which is anywhere from 30 minutes to 10K. And it's just an easy pace. And then...
what's easy? It's easy is like slower than a relaxed pace for you, or...?
Easy is endurance pace. Endurance pace is... for me, it's like anything between, I would say, 5:30 to 5 minutes.
But it's conversational kind of running.
Yeah, it's a pace I can talk. Some days... Some easy runs will feel harder because I'm really tired.
Right.
So sometimes I won't even wear a watch. I'm just going to go and enjoy my run. I definitely have a weekly long run on the weekend, either on Saturday or Sunday. And I have 3 workouts. So the workouts are either tempos, fartlek, intervals. And we always have 1 day of like pure speed.
So a tempo for you would be closer to a marathon, a race pace?
Yeah, a race pace. It can be depending of the length of the tempo, 10K pace or marathon pace.
Okay. And then your speed work is like just go fast for shorter periods.
Shorter periods can be either strides or 200 meters on track, can be longer intervals, but still fast.
Okay.
Just a bit more recovery time, and we'll go either on the track or a really flat surface.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I'm just trying to give some, I guess, context to some people that, you know, maybe they don't have 7 days a week to train.
Yeah, right.
And we always say that quality is always better than quantity. If you can train 7 days a week.
Definitely, yeah.
It's manageable with recovery runs, which are really important because those are also... there are also opportunities for the body to heal. It's
just, yeah,
you're running, but you're also it's active recovery essentially, which you can do in a swim, in a bike, and
cross training. Some people that don't have time, I mean, I remember when I used to work 40 hours a week, my first year of running back distance, I used to, you know, have some days off because I was so tired.
Right.
And I would always keep my longer run on the weekend just to make sure I have an endurance run. And some days that I had time on the lunchtime, I would just go on the bike and do a 30-minute bike just to get my legs going, wake up kind of.
Right.
But I always kept those important days, which is more like training focus of my races, you know, the interval, the tempo, and the fartlek.
Okay.
Yeah.
Obvious. Okay, nice. And so I guess another question I have is, how do you keep it when you're training 7 days a week and you're training, you know, on the same streets around your, try and train around your house? How do you keep it interesting other than having a really good training partner?
Yeah, that's a good option.
Who takes your mind off of stuff? How do you keep things fun and interesting when you're training 7 days a week for, you know, if it's a marathon, we'll get to that, but, mm-hmm. you know, 16-week training program, which I find I'm doing my first 16-week plan right now. It's so long.
It is long.
With obviously, like, with some racing in between, but...
I mean, that's one thing, just to make sure that, you know, not get bored during your training plan, especially if you're training for a marathon or any other races. You want to have a build up and you want to have those little races in between to keep things interested. So that's one thing I do with my coach. We plan a specific race. But during those, you know, those week of training, I have a dog. So sometimes I will bring my dog on a short run. So a 5K up to 10K, mm-hmm. Especially the days that I don't feel like running. So that keeps me interested and I'm having fun. My dog's having fun.
He has a very appropriate name too.
Yeah, but, right? Miles. that's one of the reasons why I choose him, is a good running dog.
Right.
I mean, other than having a training partner to run with, I try to, you know, once a week have some music on easy runs. I try to kind of plan new routes to run on, either loops or with nice view. Here in Montreal, we have, I think we're lucky, we have Canal Lachine, Mont Royal, you know, Parc Maisonneuve. Some other places are really great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's awesome. For long runs, you can just do a huge loop and go to the Olympic Stadium, Mount Royal.
Canal, oh, yeah, definitely.
Old Port. We do a lot of our runs in the Old Port, which is really, really nice to go out towards Circuit Jacques Villeneuve, Gilles Villeneuve,
yeah.
As well, which is to do laps and stuff like that.
Yep.
So you had the big win in Ottawa for the half marathon.
Yeah.
And then what? Now it's a 118, your first half, essentially,
mm-hmm.
which is remarkable. Then what were your thoughts after that? What were you thinking?
I think I was just really proud that I was able to cover that distance in that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was proud also that I was, at that time, I was the fastest distance runner at that on the half marathon for Quebec, the province of Quebec. But after that, it gave me the confidence to maybe run longer, which, you know, I ran the Montreal Marathon after that. I was kind of scared of the training that would take to get to that level,
mm-hmm.
Because it was already hard to train for the half marathon. But yeah, I think it just gave me a lot of confidence.
Awesome. And then that's when did you start the marathon training after, right after Ottawa, or because it did you run in the same year?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Montreal Marathon was in September.
Correct.
I had run my first marathon the year year prior, I think, in Toronto.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I wanted to run that one with you.
Yeah.
And I said, I told myself, well, she ran a 118. That's pretty crazy. But if I can run with you and hang on, I'll probably PB.
Yeah, that's what you did.
in the marathon. So how did the training change for you? Was it too much too soon? Do you feel like, well, listen, you performed amazing in the marathon as mm-hmm. well, but was evident in the training because of the buildup that you had done to the half?
Yeah, I mean, having that buildup for the half definitely helped because it's, you know, it's a foundation you need for a marathon. So training is similar, but it's just longer. And the fact that I was able to maintain that kind of training for that amount of time, Claude was confident, you know, I didn't get injured. Definitely it was more tired after. So we did recover for about, the half marathon was in May. And we took a month of just easy running, some workouts. And then back in, I think, July, that's when I told him, I was like, okay, let's train for the Montreal Marathon. Mm-hmm. And then that's when he asked me, okay, I've never trained anybody for the marathon. And I was like, oh, well, I said, that's perfect. I've never ran the marathon. And then it was kind of our joke to everyone, the fact that both of us never did anything for the marathon. But he really enjoyed learning about, you know, what kind of workouts he would give me. So he did his homework, and he talked to some great coaches in Montreal. And I think the hardest part was the long run. The long run leading up to the marathon, because I've never ran longer than 25K.
Crazy.
At that moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what was the longest in that training block that you had to do? I guess just for people listening that, how much running should somebody do? How much would you suggest going to?
I think it depends.
Preparing for a marathon.
I think it depends of your level at that moment. At that moment, I was able to handle pretty well a week of training, you know, of 90 to 120K.
Right.
So that's what Claude did. He built a training plan that would bring me up to 120K, mm-hmm. maybe 130, but not higher than that because he didn't want me to get injured. And, I mean, to run a marathon, it's 42.2K. You want to be able to consistently run about 60 to 90K if you're a beginner, mm-hmm. or even experienced person. It also depends of your schedule. So I was working maybe 15 hours, but I was going also 15 hours to school. I was finishing my master's degree, so I couldn't run more. It was impossible to recover and do all these things. And then attempt to do a training plan like this.
Right. Okay. And what does your long run in those plans look like? So 100 to 130 a week, what's the longest distance you'll get up to on your long run?
I mean, we started up around 25K.
Okay.
And then went up to 28, 30. And then for the last month, you know, I think it was in August, at that time, I was probably around 32, 35, and then that was it.
About a month before the actual event.
2 weeks before the actual event,
right.
Yeah.
That'll be your longest run, and then...
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so, coming off of the Ottawa win again, was that your mindset going into the marathon, too? Did you think it would translate as well? Did you think you'd be... the winner? Did you think you'd come on the podium? Like, did you have that in your mind again? Or
yeah, I was telling everybody, I said, listen, I'm gonna win the Montreal Marathon. And I think I was telling them I was gonna run sub 250, because
okay.
that's what I was training for,
right?
I wasn't saying that to seem like I was bold and I'm gonna win.
Mm-hmm.
I had that feeling that nobody, you know, competitive would sign up for the marathon and I would have a chance. And knowing myself and my potential, I was ready to pull out that performance that day.
And do you feel the pressure? I know you said it, but do you do that as almost like a self-sabotage? Like, if I say it, I better train properly to be able to do it? 'Cause
yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, that was my goal. I set, you know, two or three goals for that day. First one was to win, mm-hmm. whatever time it takes. Then my second goal was to run sub 250. And my third goal was, okay, if these two don't work out the day of the marathon, then, you know, just finish it. And for me, that was enough. Having that win from the half marathon in Ottawa, you know, that race, I was pretty much alone the whole race. And I didn't know if I would be racing alone in Montreal, but at that time I was training alone. So
right.
I knew I was able to, to race well.
Right. And that's a funny story. I don't know why. I think it was your first one. So I was like, yeah, I'll run with you. You know,
I don't remember when exactly we planned this. I think it was like
maybe a week before,
week or two before. I remember. Yeah.
But I was trained for, that would have been after Ironman.
Yeah. You were doing the Ironman.
Yeah.
Back in June or July.
No. Yeah. I did the half.
Yeah.
But the full was in August, but, I was just saying it was your first one, so I wanted to, I'm going to pace you, right?
Yeah. You're pacing wow. me. You're helping me on.
Helping, yeah, until about 33K. But I'll never forget the beginning. And another one of our friends who we met through the run community, Mark Langevin.
Yeah.
It's such a funny story to meet you at the starting line. So I took the metro to the back, because it starts on Pont Jacques Cartier Bridge.
Yeah, yeah. All
right. And I took the metro to Longueuil.
Yeah.
And I had to go to the washroom before the start, you know. So I'm waiting in this line for the porta potty. I know you're there waiting. You know, there's pressure to get to the starting line. The clock's ticking. I'm not in the porta potty yet. I'm like freaking out. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go back to the Île Sainte-Hélène exit or metro stop.
Okay.
So essentially go back one stop. But when I went back to the metro, the pass didn't work.
Oh my God.
Because it only goes out. It doesn't allow you to come back into the island. So I had to go to the bank machine because I don't carry much with me before a race.
No, which makes sense.
You don't have stuff on you.
Right.
So I took out. I had to go take out money. Thank God I had my debit card. I bought a ticket. I saw Mark Langevin in the metro at that point, and I was like, "Mark, I'm at Longueuil Metro." I was like, "I have to get to the starting line." He's like, "Dude, you're supposed to be at the starting line. Ariane's waiting." Blah blah. I'm like, "I have to go to the washroom." He's like, "Okay, come on, let's go." So he like literally like escorted me essentially from the Parc Jean-Drapeau Metro. I went to the bathroom. I found the bathroom, which is not too far off. And then we sprinted to the starting line, and that was my warm up.
That was your warm up, yeah.
And it was like minutes before, I think.
Oh yeah, I was on the line, and then I saw you, and you looked super calm, and I didn't even know about that story.
Yeah,
you never told me.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm ready. Yeah. And then you looked at me, you're ready.
It was, and we were ready.
Yeah, we were ready.
Ready to go. You were focused as usual, and the race went super well as far as I remember. It was fast, and I think at 33 I died off 32 or 33, but at that point I knew my time was in the bag, and you were set,
yeah, right,
to win it. You were leading. It was fun to actually run beside you that whole time,
because yeah.
I was with the bikes and stuff and the front of the pack for the women.
Yeah. Yeah, for the women.
Yeah, but it was still a lot of fun.
It was a great day. I mean, we had the weather, everything was in place for a good performance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And how do you, preparing a week before, so what does a taper week look like for you? And I know I do tapering too, but I just want people to know from yourself, you know, like
yeah.
an elite athlete, what does a taper week look like? I know maybe some people have a loose idea of what that means, but what would you suggest, or what do you do yourself?
I mean, taper for me is also, especially for a marathon or a half marathon, I like to do my taper and my carb loading at the same time. So for me, it's, you know, it's a good week. Mm-hmm. You try to rest as much as possible. So I definitely prioritize my sleep. I go to bed around 9 or 9:30, max 10 p.m. And I make sure I hydrate. So I always, you know, carry my water bottle around and make sure I go to the bathroom every hour. It's just a thing that works out for me. And in terms of running, instead of doing, you know, hard workout, we definitely keep the intensity, but shorter workouts, you know, no more than 10K running. And then a couple of days before the race, I have some days off and I try to roll, stretch more. I get a massage and that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And what does nutrition look like? Do you change the way you eat? Like, I know hydration, I do the same thing. You don't want to drink 4 liters of water the day before a race.
No.
You want to do it the whole week, right?
Yeah, definitely. You want to make sure that you're not changing your habits. You're eating the same type of food. You're not trying something new. But definitely, I prioritize pasta. And I try to get as much as carbs as I can. I don't exaggerate because I don't want to change too much of my nutrition. But definitely, I will, you know, it's taper week. For me, it's also taper on fibers and vegetables and all this stuff because you don't need it. You don't need it for a marathon. So depending of, you know, I eat a bit of everything. So I'll have some fish, some chicken, some beef, and just pasta. Okay. Rice, all this stuff. Not every meal, obviously, but every dinner.
Yeah, just introduce it to the diet a little bit more and more leading up to night before race day.
But yeah.
I like what you said, nothing new. You don't want to try anything new.
No, exactly.
Your same thing goes for race nutrition.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to change things that you either practice before the big day. So, you know, if you have a long run and you integrate some gels or some sort of hydration, you don't want to do something different the week or the day of your race.
Yeah, because you don't know how you're going to react.
No, I mean, yeah, exactly. You don't want any surprises.
Yeah, you definitely want to carry those gels with you, too. Did I ever tell you the story about when I saw they had some, it was like, I thought what I thought was gel on a stick, on a popsicle stick.
Oh, yeah.
And I ate it.
Oh, yeah.
But it was actually Vaseline to help people with the chafing.
What race was it? No, don't say it. Don't say it.
I don't know which race it was. It was early on. I didn't have a coach back then.
Yeah, probably not.
It was disgusting. But anyways. So you won the Montreal Marathon, which is exceptional. And then where did things go from there?
I mean, I do remember one thing about the Montreal Marathon. People were so excited. I think they haven't had something, you know, that surprising for a marathon in the community that happened in a long time. I think, you know, I had so many people writing to me. I was in the journal. I had some journalists sending me messages to do an interview. Mm-hmm. So that was something I've never really had to face. It's a new experience. And then after that, it kind of like, it's like the switch turn. I had to do great after that. I had to progress. So, you know, first thing I had to recover from that marathon, I think I did some cross country races for fun, but 2017 was like, okay, you know, big goals.
Let's go.
I have to do something. And
so is that pressure you put on yourself? Because you're saying you got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
You're a local, let's say, celebrity, I think. Because like, every time we run together, people are like, hey, Ariane.
Hey, Ariane.
Hey, say Ariane.
Yeah, I mean, you don't expect things like that. Yeah. I'm not a professional runner. I don't think I am. Wow. I think I'm, you know, a good runner. And I race pretty fast because those are my goals. I have people that wants to support that, and which is great. I have great sponsors. But, you know, I don't see myself as a professional runner because it's not my job. It's my hobby. And it's great that it brings me to those, you know, to that level, but it doesn't pay the bills. And I think having that attention is because we don't have that great runners in Quebec. And it inspired people, which is great. Our running community is increasing and it's getting bigger and bigger. And there's more run clubs. People wants to run. They want to get out and they want to meet people. They want to do things. So that's great. I think for 2017, I had a lot more pressure because I put pressure on myself. But I think the attention definitely, you know, it's like, people now look at what I do. And that was, you know, the first time that happened to me.
Right. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, when is your next race? That was a common question. And I was like, I don't know.
Right.
Right now I'm just training, and a lot of people were asking, when is your next marathon? And at that moment I was like, okay, I guess I have to run another marathon or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So that was a pressure.
Right. Yeah. I know you think these things through though. So, you know, you assess everything, see how the training's going. You felt good. You recover. And then what was the decision? What was the next marathon you signed up for? Was it Toronto?
It was Ottawa.
Ottawa. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Ottawa in 2017. I took a month off after 2016. Right. So I took December off. And I was doing activities such as yoga, strength training, cross training. I was swimming, just different things. Just take my body into a different sports. And then January, that's when I started doing some more workouts, running again.
Right.
And when I started feeling better, like more fit, I told Claude, I say, hey, what do you think of? What do you think of Ottawa in 2017? And he was excited about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you had the support from your coach.
Yeah.
Ready to go, and then how did that unravel for you, or how did that present itself? And
well, first thing is, like we mentioned earlier, not to get too bored. We placed other races into the training plan.
Right.
So we decided that I would do first a 5K. I think it was in March. And then a 10K in April with a half marathon 2 weeks after. And then the marathon in May, okay, which was end of May at that time.
And just to be clear here, because I used to just sign up for stuff because I wanted to.
Yeah.
But when you have an A race in mind.
Yeah, A race, your priority, yeah.
Your priority race. It's okay to race before, but strategically. So I think what you're saying is, you know, plan the racing to keep you sharp.
Yeah.
But you're not going to go all out and everyone, because that's not your... It's just this, exactly that, to keep you in shape, to keep you honest, to see where you're at in your training.
Yeah, I mean...
For the big goal.
You definitely have to determine what your goal is in your race, you know. For me, the races I put before a marathon or a half marathon is either to sharp my fitness or to get another PB. But 2017, I was really fit coming out of the spring. So we decided to go after PBs. And that's what we did. We raced. I raced my fastest 10K, my fastest half, and then my fastest half marathon. And I was not injured at that time. So I was, you know, I was fit. I was ready to race for about, it was my second year. Yeah.
And what were those times? The 10K you said was 34:56?
Yeah, it was 34:56. I think I broke that record on the course that day.
In Ville-Saint-Laurent.
Yeah.
I was there for that too.
Yeah. People were really excited. I didn't even know there was a record. And I was like, okay.
I can do this. Yeah. And the half, you did 1:15, you said?
Yeah, 1:15:58. That was great too. I think I placed third or fourth that day.
Imagine that.
And that was great. It was a good competition, which was exciting because it was in Montreal as well.
Yeah. And your best marathon was the Montreal that you did right before Ottawa. So that was a 2:48.
Yeah, 2:48 something. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what was the goal for Ottawa and how did that go? How did that race go for you?
So my goal for Ottawa was sub 2:40 and I was training at that pace. It was hard. I remember struggling a lot with the training. I was not injured at that time either. I think I was lacking a training partner. Yep. So yeah, I was alone. I was running twice a day sometimes. I had doubles. And, you know, I was getting bored a little bit with just running in general. And at that time, I was planning my wedding. So I had a lot on my mind, a lot of stress. And I think I was not recovering really well from all the training. But that day, I was able to pull out a 2:41.58, I think.
Right.
Which was still a PB, a huge PB.
Yeah, amazing.
I was a couple of seconds off the standard, the elite standard here in Quebec.
What's the elite standard?
Well, to get on the elite program, so to get some pension from the federation,
right?
They set standards, and there's standards for every distances. For the marathon, it was 2:41.47.
Okay.
So I was a couple of seconds off, which was a bit of, you know, I was disappointed, but I couldn't be disappointed with a PB. So.
Yeah, when, like we say, we set the three goals for a race.
Yeah, exactly.
One of them's a PB, one of them's get the medal. So you got two out of three, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, you know, I was still, at that time, I was number one in Quebec. And then I was, you know, top 10 at the end of the year. I was top 10 Canadian. And, you know, it's still pretty great. But I wasn't happy. I wasn't satisfied.
Okay, so how do you face that adversity now? You know, you're not satisfied with that. And then, so what's the next step from there? I mean, until that point, everything was kind of heading up. You know, everything was looking up for you, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So how do you then reset and be like, okay, how do we make this better? How do we improve, you know, go back to the drawing board essentially? And
yeah, I mean, Claude and I definitely had a conversation, you know, what worked, what didn't work. It was my first time focusing really on nutrition during a marathon. And I got sick a couple of times during the race. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you lose a couple of seconds here and there. But in general, I think my training was like, I was not recovering. I was not recovering from the runs. And that's because I had a lot on my plate. And after the marathon, it's like, you know, you get tired, obviously. You're trying to recover, and I was just not recovering. But I wanted to run another marathon. I just wanted to run sub 240. And so we tried to train for that, and we played some other races. But at that time, I was not even able to race any other distances. I was just tired. And that's when I got injured.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 2017 was a big one for you because, you know, you signed up for Toronto. I think we were both signed up for it at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, you hadn't been injured since I'd met you, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always minor things, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
A little bit of knee, a little ankle, like some strength training kind of brings you back. And
yeah, you have some soreness. You have, you know, pain that lasts a couple of days but disappear because you roll out, you get a massage, or, you know, you did some strength training. But at that time, it just kind of happened. We were a couple of days before the marathon. We were doing a workout together. Mm-hmm. And I had that soreness in my knee for a couple of weeks. And I just didn't think it was something important. I just, I think because I had a lot on my plate, I was kind of putting it away. You know, I just didn't focus on it. And I should have.
Right.
Yeah.
And so at what point do you say like, okay, this is more serious than just like a normal, you know, tweak?
Yeah.
Because I think before races, I think we always laugh about it.
Yeah.
There's always something.
Oh, my hip, my shoulder, my ankle,
right.
My back.
Because you're doing a lot less mileage. Things kind of tend to reset. Your muscles are healing probably a little bit because you're not running as much. So how did you say like, How'd you say, okay, enough's enough?
What's normal, what's not normal?
Yeah.
You know, I think it depends of your pain tolerance, but I think with years of experience and injuries, obviously, you know, when you get older, you're like not more tolerant, but you're smarter. So when I realized that I wasn't able to walk properly, I went a little bit too far. But that's when I realized, okay, you know, I'm an adult. I'm smart. I'm just going to stop running. Mm. It just doesn't make sense to sacrifice not only your health, but, you know, you can aggravate your injury and then it takes longer to recover. So that's when I decided a couple of days before the marathon, I said, you know what, there's always going to be another marathon and I would rather do a marathon healthy and not in pain for, you know, 42.2K. You know, I want to have fun. I run to have fun and I just didn't see the point.
Still,
yeah. It was not normal. Yeah, right.
Exactly. So I remember when that happened. I mean, I was like sad for you, mm-hmm. like as a friend, training partner and stuff. Like it was, because I can only imagine how hard it must have been for you to say, like, to train that hard, you know?
Yeah.
But know that you couldn't, you know, and you love running.
Yeah, I mean, you put into a 16 or 12 week of a marathon training, and then a couple of days before the event, you're like, okay, it's not realistic, and you know, there's always going to be another one.
Right.
It was hard. I think it was harder to say it out loud and to people than to tell myself it's not a good idea. You know, people were sad for you, and it's like you're kind of like, I was realizing that I wasn't going to have the chance to perform that day and show everybody, you know, this is what I worked for. So I was disappointed, but I think I was jealous as well because some other runners were going to have that chance to perform, and mm-hmm. I wasn't able to do the same thing. Yeah.
The fighter in you is telling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the competitor.
Yeah, the heart was saying, I want to go, but the head was saying, it's not a good idea. It's not yeah. going to benefit me in the long run.
No, exactly.
But I think the lesson in all of it is that exact thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to know when to say enough's enough and say, okay, this isn't good for my health. Like you say, there's always another race. And that goes for like anybody who's just out there trying to do a PB. It doesn't matter what time it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And not to be disappointed, you know, like you take what you can on the day and come back stronger the next time, you know, that's all you can do. So then the road to recovery began for you, and I saw what that was like, storming into 2018.
Yeah, it took me, I had like a stress reaction in my knee and some inflammation on my cartilage, and I didn't even know, you know, I never had that kind of injury. So just to make sure, I decided with my doctor, obviously, to take about 1 to 2 months of non-running, because for a runner, knees are really important as well as other parts of your body. But I think the knee takes a little bit longer to heal usually. So it was hard because I couldn't run and I couldn't bike. I couldn't swim. There was a lot of things I wasn't allowed to do. And the fact that I didn't have sports or exercise in my daily routine, you know, it was hard. It was, I feel like, you know, especially with the lack of light, I felt like
in the winter, yeah, really dark.
It was really dark. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt like I was in a dark place, and it was hard to get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, it's a sensitive topic, you know, you're used to being a certain way and then it's taken away from you, you know. I think that's an important thing to realize sometimes. You know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to perform and do some stuff and prove it to ourselves and prove it to, you know, friends and family. But, you know, when it's taken away, that's when you, did you find a new appreciation for running or for your body?
Yeah.
Did you change anything?
When I started running again in January, so it was cold and it was kind of snowy. I still had pain in my knee. And I mean, the appreciation was just to be able to get outside, some fresh air. And I think I wasn't putting pressure as much on me, pressure to perform. you know, I was happy to complete my run. That was goal number one, complete a run and go back the next day. And I remember my knee was sore for up until June or May. So that was about 5 months. And I was just happy to run every day. Obviously, I wasn't allowed to do doubles or have like a high mileage.
Like run twice a day, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just to be able to say, hey, I'm training. I did this workout and it was great. Just to be able to get out and lift, you know, things that I wasn't allowed or able to do 1 or 2 months before.
Oh, so you added some cross training? You added more strength training to your routine,
yeah.
You'd say?
Yeah, because, you know, just to make sure that I would be able to, I would say, get into my fitness. I didn't want to increase my running all of a sudden, just to put that weight on me and that pressure on my knee. So I did some swimming, which I was allowed at that moment. But I did some strength training most of the time because just to get, you know, those muscles working again properly. And also I was focusing on fixing my biomechanic. There were some weaknesses that I had to fix to get back in a better shape and also to avoid that injury again,
right,
to come back. So, yeah, I think it's good to integrate different things than just running.
Yeah, switch it up.
Yeah.
Because you need this, like a plan will give you with the structure for the running, you need to stabilize the muscles in your legs and ankles and knees and hips. And
yeah.
Your core is so key to all that. And I think, I mean, as sad as I was to see you go through the injury part and, well, happy to see you come back, obviously. But
yeah.
I think like most of the things you do, I benefit from it. So
we both benefit from
it. But I mean, you know, you showed me some exercises for strength training as well. And I mean, it's good for any runner to know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because it just makes you stronger overall. I think that might be a misconception with runners is that it's not necessary or it's going to hurt the running portion, but it makes it so much stronger and it helps recovery so much
more. Yeah. And I think when you age, so when you get older,
like me,
well,
you're still 26 to me.
I know. But I think that's one thing I learned, you know, aging, your body is hurting a little bit more and you're not recovering the same way. So as you know, your early 20s, or when you're in college. So having the cross training and the strength training, it's like a foundation that will carry your running longer and also helps to recover. I find when I move my body or some of my limbs differently, it just loosen up. It helps recovering, especially after longer runs and you're still working, you know, you're still doing work on your body, still some time on your feet. So I think it's definitely something important I learned through that injury.
Yeah, I mean, you look at professional hockey players too. I mean, they do all their big training in the summer. Then once hockey season rolls around, they're doing maintenance stuff.
Right.
Because they have to recover from the games. And so it's kind of similar in that sense where you do the build in your off season.
Yeah.
And then incorporate some of that stuff as you go along in your training program, you know, a run and a weight session or
yeah, I mean
it could benefit.
Some people like to, I mean we all like different things. And you know, there are people that likes to run throughout the whole year and that's okay. Like if that's what you enjoy and you recover well that way, mm-hmm. if it works out for you, it's fine. But there's so many things, so many activities you can add to your routine mm-hmm. that works really well with running.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was the end of 2017.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, we're not doing Toronto. Were you already thinking about something for 2018?
Yeah.
I know Berlin ended up being the hurrah for you.
Yeah, finally a good ending to my 2018 year, which is not over yet, but
right.
I signed up for Berlin in January. And for me, it was like, you know, new year, new goal.
The New Year's resolution.
Exactly. And, you know, I was like, I wasn't running that much at that time. But I had hope that, you know, I had 9 months to get ready for that race. So for me, it was definitely realistic. And I didn't have in mind that I would run another marathon than this one, because that's what I said in 2017. You know, before Toronto, I said, okay, I'm going to run Berlin in 2018. And that was it. So I didn't really change my mind. I almost changed my mind. I think it was in March. Things were not working well. I was not racing. I wasn't excited about racing because I wasn't fit. And I had weeks that I was running three times. And I wasn't doing cross training at the times. I was just, I had a kind of like anxiety, performance anxiety. I was nervous before workouts. I was working full time, overtime as well. And it's just nothing was working well. I was not sleeping well, not recovering. My knee was hurting. I was not excited about training. So, you know, I had a discussion with my coach, and we decided to take two weeks off. And he told me, you know, Berlin is still far. We still have time. Mm-hmm. And it's fine to have downs. It happens. And just have to find, you know, a way to get motivation.
Right.
And that's what I did. I remember it was like writing down, what do I need to achieve this type of training throughout a week? So I remember we discussed earlier, how do you not get bored in your training? Mm-hmm. So I was trying to find ways to train every day and be motivated every day.
Right.
And, you know, we mentioned having a partner. And I think it was like finding new routes, meeting with groups for running, which I did. I not that I signed up for run clubs, but I asked a couple of people, you know, who are you running with? And okay, I'm going to join that
other
day.
Other good runners in the city, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I started doing. On the weekend, I started going to the AVM run club with Melanie and her group.
What's the abbreviation there, AVM?
Athletis Ville-Marie.
And Melanie's also a very good Quebec runner, amazing person to train with, and she's a good person in general.
She's very great. Yeah, I really enjoy having her, you know, weekly on the weekend just to talk. And, you know, she was also a good support because she went through injuries as well. So it was great to have that support. And, you know, people from her run club were really great. Mm-hmm. So, you know, week after week, I started just feeling a bit better. And, you know, you were there also to support for like most of the weeks for training.
For the first time, I think, since in the 3 years that I knew you, this is probably the year we trained together the most.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was dedicated, for the most part,
yeah,
at least twice a week,
yeah,
for workouts.
For workouts. Because I needed someone in those hard workouts, because mentally I wasn't fit. I wasn't strong, and having someone that I could, you could, you know, pace me or just talk, for me, it was very helpful. And, week after week, it just started getting better. And I think I signed up for a 5K after that, just to get it out of the way. And at the moment, I decided that I wasn't going to put pressure on myself, either on the time that I was racing, but also I just didn't care. I wanted to run Berlin, and that was my main focus.
Again, a race.
Yeah.
Let's just see how we feel on the day. I think this year we ran together. We ran Pointe Claire,
yeah,
10K. We did Lachine half.
Yeah.
I'd say not our best times.
No, really.
But it's all part of the... part of the process, right?
Part of the process.
Added in the training. It's a workout, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Lachine Half was in our A race.
No, definitely not.
Mine's Toronto, and, you know, yours was Berlin.
Yeah.
So.
Something that I learned with Claude was not to compare yourself and not to compare your times. It's not because you did faster a year the year before that every year is going to be like that. And I think that really helped me and, you know, put into perspective how I was going to approach every race. You know, I was putting a lot of pressure, and I think that's why I started having some anxiety. And at some point I was like, okay, you need to get over this. You know, you're a bigger person. You have a lot of experience. And I think that's when it started being better for me.
And I noticed it in you.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Like, our conversations went from, like, you know, those conversations, like, my knee's a bit sore today.
Right.
I'm tired, you know. To eventually it was like we weren't even talking about that stuff anymore.
Oh no.
It's like who's kicking whose butt and which workout.
Yeah, know? I mean it was more like a laugh.
Yeah.
Than it was before. I think also knowing that you know, I was really tired and all this stuff, and I finally, you know, learned why I was so tired. I was anemic, and that finally, like, you know, I have an answer and I know how to correct it. And changing my nutrition and getting the right supplements. I think once I had all those details, those answers put together, it finally gave me a little bit of hope.
Confidence,
yeah.
Yeah, and I could see that.
Oh, yeah.
Once you figured that out, it was like the switch turned on.
Oh, the switch turned on.
Arianne's back,
oh,
you know.
Yeah.
You could see it 100%. And just that focus and that drive to do well. I mean, no doubt when you left here, I knew you were going to kill Berlin, you know?
Thanks.
What was that experience like? I want to run. It's part of the, so it was your first major, which is crazy. You know, I've done one before. It's one of them that I'd love to do. So what was that whole experience for you? And I want you to tell the story, please, about the,
Yeah, Berlin was, I think, the nicest race I ever ran, to be honest. It was well prepared, well organized. I planned my whole trip by myself because I didn't have accommodations there. So Berlin was able to offer me the bib number, which was great. So I was part of the elite field. And I flew on September 12, so I arrived there on September 13. So
and
I was
the
there.
This is on the 16th.
Yeah, so I was there three full days before the big day. And my husband was there with me, my best friend. And the main focus was for me not to walk around too much. But we, you know, I had a little itinerary, visiting some places, resting, getting massage, eating well, drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Drinking water.
Yeah, drinking water.
A little pause.
I was, you know, I was very nervous. I remember. I think the one thing that always come into my mind is why am I doing this? And it's ridiculous because, you know, you set a goal and you train for it for weeks and then you're nervous, and that's when I had my mental preparation, you know, and I started just realizing, okay, you know what? This is going to be so much fun. This is a big race. And
probably the biggest race you've ever been in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I put so much work. So I put so much time because I wanted to. And I had one of the best workouts. I've never ran that much in my entire life. I had weeks I was running 140, 150 Ks, and I'm finally healthy. You know, I had some fasciitis, fasciite plantaire, but, you know, plantar fasciitis. But I was feeling great other than just that. So that's when I, you know, switch on, And I was, you know, 2 days before, I was like, okay, I'm excited. I was really excited. And I couldn't sleep, but I was like, you know, sleep.
But this is another thing. We want to bank our sleep well before the event.
Yeah.
We know the night before, probably not going to sleep too much.
Exactly. But
and
I was
get up early too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I remember I was like going to bed and I was like thinking about the line, the starting line, all the elites. We had the that runner, Eliud
Kipchoge.
Yeah, who was, you know, supposed to break the...
Breaking documentary.
World record.
He was going for it.
Yeah. So that was exciting as well because, you know, you want to be part of that experience as well. And so... Saturday, we had that elite meeting, and all the elites were there. And I've never met so many fast runners all at once in one room.
Right.
And that was intimidating.
Did
but
you feel small? Like
I felt small. I felt small. But at the same time, I was like, wow, this is one of it's probably once in your life to have all of these people together for that one day. And it was just, it was amazing. And then I was even more excited for the next day. And so they told us to show up around 7:15 a.m. On Sunday, the day of the race, to get on the shuttle to get to the course.
And this is for all the elite runners.
Right.
They take the shuttle to the starting line.
Yeah, they make sure we're on time for the race, that we have time for warm-up. You know, we have like an area, a specific area, VIP for us. And they make sure that we're well prepared. So I was waiting for the bus, and I was by myself sitting on a bench. And I was inside the hotel where all the elites were meeting at that point. And just like, you know, playing on my phone, Instagramming.
Mm-hmm.
And then
things we normally do before.
Yeah. You know, I was nervous. I was shaking a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I look up. And I see Dibaba, a female elite runner, one of the fastest. And she's so cute. She's so small. And I'm like, wow, this is great. And she's just hanging out. And all of a sudden, she just sit behind me. Just like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. So I, you know, I send a text to someone. And then a minute after, I have Eliud sitting next to me on my right side. I'm like, wow.
Little did we know.
Yeah.
The future world record.
Future world record.
Sitting right next to you.
Just casual. Just very humble. He's, you know, chatting with his friend, his pacer, I don't know.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, there's just, I didn't know what to do.
Like world class.
Yeah.
Top of the top.
Top of the top, the fastest one.
And he's with everybody else.
And, you know, a week before going to Berlin, I watched that documentary, Breaking 2.
Good with motivation.
Nike Project. And it's a great documentary. So I saw him on that movie. Now I see him in real person.
Crazy.
And, yeah, so at some point I...
Good juju.
Huh?
Good juju?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to take a selfie, but I feel so shy. So, you know, such a fan.
Right. You just wanted to let him, because as a fellow competitor, you know what it's like before a race, and out of respect.
Oh, yeah, out of respect. I didn't want to, you know, change his routine or his focus. I didn't want to be that one person that bothers him.
Right.
Yeah.
And did that, like, pump you up, or what was the emotion?
Just excitement.
Yeah.
Excitement because, you know, just that opportunity to be part of this experience, this race. I think at that moment I knew like this was going to be a great day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
it just started well.
Yeah. And it was, right?
Oh yeah. We had such great weather. You know, the one number thing that you wish on your race, your day race.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took the shuttle, we head to the course, and I felt so calm. So composed. And that was probably one of the first time that I think I felt that way, because I remember Ottawa, I was very nervous. I was shaky. I felt like I was going to throw up. But in Berlin, maybe because I had that experience before, I felt ready. My legs were fresh. I just knew I was going to do great. I was only positive. And you know, maybe because I had such a difficult year, so much struggles, that today, you know, I knew I put all the effort in my training, so many weeks of, you know, hard training, that I didn't want it to go wrong. I did everything I needed to do before the race, mm-hmm. and all I had to do during that race is run the same pace I usually do and stay calm and enjoy.
It was the victory lap for you. You made it, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was the cherry on top.
Cherry on top of the year.
Yeah, and I was up at 3 a.m., watching the race on TV. Well, it was good to watch Kipchoge attempt the world record and finally break it. He did 2 hours and 1 minute, which is insane.
I think it was a minute faster than the X world record.
Absolutely crushed it.
Yeah,
and I was also looking for you, obviously, which I saw you at the very end on the feed, which was great. But I was just so happy for you, and you finally accomplished the goal that you set out to do in 2017.
Yeah, I wanted to run. The goal was to run 2:40. I didn't have a specific time under 2:40, but I knew if I was going to do the same training, I should do the same I did in Ottawa, because it worked out really well. Maybe just a little bit more than what I did before. And I was fresh, you know. I didn't race big races this year, so I think my body was ready for something big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you did about 2:39:37 to be exact, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Got it right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on that.
And Thank you.
I definitely, it was so nice to see you do it, and I felt it was nice to be a part of it and see you come out of the year so strong.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, like it's tough, you know, it's tough to watch somebody go through that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? Your friend, you know,
you want to help and you want to do something to change things. But I think something that I learned is, we can have as much help as we want. You're pretty much the only person that can make the change.
I think I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
So what does 2019 look like? I know it's shortly after, but, you know, it's never too early to start looking at new goals. And I know for you probably already have a few of them written down. So
yeah, I mean, I think knowing that I'm not planning on being injured for 2019.
Good.
That's definitely
good.
One thing that I'm focusing on, staying healthy. Yeah. I have big goals. I think having in place, you know, my job finally, I'm working part-time, which helps. But having that routine set up, you know, I know exactly each day, the purpose of each day. And I think the next step is, how can I bring down those time? What's the next, you know, barrier that I have to get over?
Right.
That's something I haven't figured out yet. I think every year I talk to my coach. We have a deep conversation in December, because that's when I rest. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I definitely want to focus more on my 10K distance.
Awesome.
And we're planning on doing a marathon again in the fall.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the fall worked better than the spring.
Okay.
I think I will definitely focus more on shorter distance in the spring, and then bring it up a little bit.
Take it up a notch.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But your training and your passion for running goes beyond just the racing.
Oh yeah.
You also have something I think you're pretty proud of. I've been fortunate to be a part of it.
Right.
Last
two years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Charlevoix, Tremblant. Oh, three of them.
Yeah.
We did three of them. Yeah.
We did three retreats.
Yes.
I started the Out Run retreat in 2017. Our first one was in the spring of 2017 in Charlevoix. It's something I always had on my mind, because, you know, being part of Lululemon and some other great brand, it just brings you to places. And we have such a great community. We have, you know, so many things that we can share, that I wanted to create an event of, you know, 3 to 4 days. Definitely focusing on running because it's a running retreat, but also focusing on other things that can help your running. So I call them tools. So, you know, planning those workshops, those conferences with a great cook. So we definitely eat really well.
Nice.
But, you know, having this kind of event one or twice a year to reunite some of the people from the community. I just wanted to be able to share and also learn from people as well.
Right.
And, you know, obviously I can't make it last more than 3 or 4 days because people have to work and they have kids, but just being able to get out of your life and focus on yourself.
Out of your comfort zone a little bit. We get to meet such great people. And, you know, you're an elite runner, let's face it.
Yeah.
And it's nice for people to connect with somebody at such a high level. And I think that's what I love about running, is that no matter what level you're at, we all love to run. And we all love to connect. And we can share. You know, the speed changes, yes. You know, the volume changes. But the fact that you can just go out for a run and connect with that very simple thing,
mm-hmm.
everybody can do it. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I'm at my level because I want to. It's a choice. It's your choice to push in those workouts. Anybody, you know, at any age can achieve what they want. If you want to be the best marathoner in Quebec or in Canada, you have to put the training into it. That's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to improve yourself on a 10K distance, gonna put the work into it. It's no matter what the distance is, you have, you know, it's your choice
to take it where you want to take it.
Yeah,
you know, there's obviously like a God-given talent that you have.
Yeah,
which helps form and these
for
kind
a base.
Of
yeah,
exactly. But the work, definitely, they always say you could have the body of the Ferrari, but if you have the Civic engine in it,
yeah,
you're not going too fast.
No, obviously, but yeah.
And I guess I'll give you a chance. Like, I know you're supported by so many different brands and stuff like that. You want to talk about them a little bit?
Definitely.
I always give people a chance to say, like, where can people find you, you know, on social media, you know, who's supporting you?
Yeah. I mean, when I started running more seriously, I would say in 2016, you know, it takes a bit of financial resources to get to that level. And I always really liked certain brands. And for me, it was important to pick the ones that, you know, that I have more values with. And that's something that Lululemon, I really liked about Lululemon, just being able to work with the community. And they've always been very supportive of either of my goals in work, my work life, or personal goals or athletic goals. So I'm really happy that I'm still part of the family after 4 years. I met Skechers. Not a lot of people know Skechers, obviously, but
the performance side.
On the performance side, they definitely improved in the last 5 years, thanks to Meb and some other great professional runners. I met Skechers through Kevin Cat Baker because they were wearing that type of shoes. And I was looking into, you know, a shoe brand that would support my goals. I wish they did after for 3 years. So I'm for 3 years.
Awesome.
And I met also CLA Athletics through some of, you know, other great people, great hat company for running. You know, it's nice to have something focused only on one sport. They do great things, and they're from Montreal as well. And then I have Mario from Brix. Mm-hmm. Brix is a gel company, also from the Quebec province. I met Mario at one race, like Brome, and I actually approached him. And he was not taking ambassadors at that time.
Oh.
And I think it was because of me, of my bossy approach that made him, want to support athletes.
And they're special because it's a little bit different than your traditional gel.
Yeah, it's natural. It's clean sport, which I value a lot. It's basically a source of maple syrup. And he just came out one with salt as well this year. For me, I really like maple syrup, which is why I choose that, that brand. And
living in Quebec, I think it's normal. Living in Quebec, yeah, and Canada, I think it's normal. We grew up on this stuff.
Exactly. Right? And I have some other brands like Chronobar, which was made from Rosemary Jerry,
yeah,
when she was 17 years old. I think it's very inspiring to have someone like her in the Quebec province. She's now 35 or something, but she always worked really hard to get her bar somewhere. And it's also natural, vegan, gluten-free. Just to have that kind of nutrition in my routine definitely helps.
And she's also an athlete too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. She's a runner, which is great.
She gets it, yeah.
Yeah.
So awesome. And also, where can people find information about the retreat?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have a website.
Right.
So it's www.outrun.ca, and you can find all the updates and the upcoming retreats coming out January 1st.
Some nice pictures on the website
too. Yeah, made by you. Shout out to Justin.
Well, I really want to thank you for coming in today. It's been such a pleasure. We get the chance to hang out a lot, but getting this forum to do this is really, really nice. You inspire me all the time. Like, it's so great to train with you on a regular basis, and you push me to be better. So I hope that people kind of get that from this conversation and learn a few things. And definitely, I'd love to have you back when you hit your next target. So thanks again for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
This episode is brought to you by Movember, a cause that is most recognized for its mustache but has evolved into so much more. In fact, you don't even need to grow a mustache to participate. Keep your beard, grow or don't. The most important thing is raising awareness to fight the four main causes: mental health, suicide prevention, prostate cancer, and testicular cancer. Getting involved is easy. Sign up or donate at Movember.com to help change the face of men's health.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of The Rundown. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at WRGRuns. And let us know what you think using the hashtag LoRundown. LoRundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in downtown Montreal. Produced and recorded by Andrew Ward. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi, with assistance by Mark Grimberg. Marketing by Jill Garcia, and hosted by me, Justin Pugliese. We hope you enjoyed our show. Now take what you've learned and run with it.